This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I'm your host, Scott Criscolo. We are in post-WrestleMania season. And now this is like the 3 or 4 month stretch where everybody either thinks everything sucks or everything's rosy until we hit, you know, the middle of July, and then we have the build to Brooklyn in August. But we got a lot to talk about. It's been interesting the last few weeks. Before we do that, though, we were supposed to have a show 2 weeks ago, the Wednesday after WrestleMania. Myself, Mr. Ben Morse, and Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato, who I had the pleasure of actually watching Mania with. But Skype decided to, you know, give me the old Steve Austin double ups that night and decided to screw the pooch. So I decided to wait instead of trying to do it another night and make a bigger mess. Gave it time to be fixed and kind of matriculate everything. And now, guess what? Here we are. So tonight, my guests are two guys who I don't believe I know one guy I've never been on a podcast with, and I don't think I've been on, other than like Place Me podcast anniversary shows, I don't think I've actually ever been on a show with this guy either. Let me bring in guest number one. He's a PTB old-timer. This guy goes back way. Even I think he was on the old message board, the old Bigelow 34 board, I think. But he's making his Main Event debut this evening, Mr. Steve Riddle. Hi, Steve.
What's up, Scott? Glad to finally make an appearance on one of these podcasts. And yes, I was a very active member and still am a very active member of the Bigelow 34 message board.
I think right now the only active member left of the Bigelow 34 message board.
I see people crop up now and then, but I think I'm the only one that still like posts stuff. So.
Well, Justin and I do pop on from time to time to see stuff. I forgot my password and he can't remember how to find my password. So usually I sneak in as a guest, but no, you're back from the old days. You follow Justin's and my wrestling online career, in essence, from the beginning. So it's an honor and a privilege to finally have you on for the first time. So good to have you on tonight, Steve.
Well, thank you.
Please finish your sentence. Don't mind me.
Oh no! I'm sorry. I had said to Justin, appreciated the shout out that you guys gave me on episode 400 of the PTB podcast, and I figured it's time enough for me to finally make it on one of these shows.
Break out. Good. And it's okay. You can interrupt me. Only Will's not allowed to interrupt me. because usually he interrupts me when I'm trying to go to break. But anyway, about some Jerry Lawler nonsense. Anyway, Steve, it's a pleasure. And my other guest, I'm pretty sure I've been on with him. Again, usually one of our unbelievably bizarre, nonsensical ensemble episodes of the Place to Be podcast, usually Christmas or Halloween or some anniversary episode. I know he was down with the guys at WrestleMania 32, and I know he had a very, very good time. if he remembers the fucking pay per view, I thought Grant Owens at WrestleMania 29 was knocked out of his gourd. But one of my favorite guys, because he loves college football just as much as I do. We root for two different teams. But if I did root for a team in the old Southeastern Conference, it would be the great Ugga, Mr. Nick Duke. Nicky!
My God, dude, you're going to get me off on like so many different topics by mentioning college football, but I'll just go ahead. I don't know that you know this, but I'll tell you, as soon as plane tickets go on sale, I'm booking a flight to Chicago for September of 17 next year, renting a car in Chicago, making the drive over to South Bend.
That's awesome.
Literally a once-in-a-lifetime, only time you know, in history trip. So my wife and I are, there's no way we're missing that. So
that's awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Obviously an ND fan, and you, of course. I got a question, though, before we move on.
Yeah, what's up?
How in the name of Christ can the Atlanta Hawks not sell out an NBA playoff game, but 94,000 people can go between the hedges?
Okay.
For the
you have to understand, like, and I think it gets kind of I feel like it's a regional thing, because I don't think anybody who doesn't live in the South really understands, like, college football isn't the biggest sport. It's the only sport.
True.
For a large majority of the people here. Like, I'll give you my dad as an example. Like, the only sport he watches religiously is college football. Could not care less about pro football, hates basketball. He'll watch baseball a little bit, but that's about it. But, like, there are so many people here who college football is the number one end-all, be-all, and nothing else matters. It's frustrating for me because I'm a big Hawks fan, a big Falcons fan as well. And you will hear people say, well, all I'm waiting on is college football season. I don't care about this other crap. So it's frustrating, but, I mean, I understand the complaint, and I hear it all the time. But, you know, college football will always be king down here, no matter what, I think.
No one was a bigger Herschel fan in the day than I was, and then he played for my NFL team for a few years before we traded him to the Vikings for pretty much everything. That was the greatest snowover job ever. I was an Aaron Murray fan. I like and of course everyone knows I work for CBS Sports, so I am very in tune to the Southeastern Conference. I'm going to ask you when we come back from break about Mark Richt, because I like Mark Richt. I don't know what your thoughts are on Mark Richt. Of course, he's now the head coach down at Miami, his alma mater. And you took the guy from Bama, right? Didn't you take one of Saban's assistants?
So Kirby Smart was the defense coordinator at Bama under Saban, pretty much from the time Saban walked in the door at Bama. But prior to that, he actually had been on Saban's staff at LSU. He had actually been on Rick's staff as a running backs coach back in the mid-2000s. And he's actually from Valdosta, Georgia, and was a 3-year starter at safety for the Dogs back in the late 90s. So he's an alumni. His wife is a former Georgia basketball player. So for him, the rumor had always been down here that he was holding out for this job, and that when it came open, it was pretty much a done deal. And that's pretty much how it played out, because Rick was gone on a Monday. By the following Monday, they were introducing Kirby Smart. They will tell you they interviewed other people, and that I will say that's the biggest lie you'll ever hear in your life, because like there was no doubt who was getting that job from the moment it came over.
We got to talk more about the state of Georgia football during the break, because obviously I'm a UNH, University of New Haven alum, and we played Valdosta State a few times when I went there, and there was a quarterback named Chris Hatcher who.
Yeah.
Chris Hatcher, who, you know, he dinked and dunked, but he threw for like 5,000 yards because all the receivers were like YAC, yards after catch, were like 37 yards.
And is that, remind me, is that D2 or D3? Because Valdosta State was a powerhouse for D2. A couple of years there in the, that would have been mid-2000s, but when you're talking about probably the 90s.
This is from 92 to 96. And
Valdosta State's been a small school powerhouse for a long time, I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all.
No, they were crazy. We'll get into that.
Absolutely.
We got to get you on Sports Evolution. I got to train the other guys because the two Cowboys are not college football junkies. We'll have to make them such. All righty, guys. As I mentioned, I had technical snafus earlier in the month, so I haven't really had a chance to talk about. I talked a little bit about it with Justin the night after Mania. We had the Plays podcast. I'll start with you, Steve. What were your thoughts on WrestleMania when it ended at 5 o'clock in the morning? What were your thoughts on the show as a whole? And does anything stick out for you?
I thought it was a good, solid, decent show. Really like blow away. I mean, it's funny, I was going on, online after the show was off, and I'm just seeing all these different people, going on saying it's like, oh, it's one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. It's just, because of the length and some of the results of the matches. But, I haven't watched it since I watched it live that night. So I would have to honestly carve out like at least a half a day to watch it all back. But, I didn't think it was that bad of a show. I mean, there were some good matches on it. The crowd I thought was pretty into it throughout, most of the night, considering they were there for, God knows how long for the whole day. So,
it felt like 5 minutes. For Nick, it felt like 5 minutes, but
I could imagine what it was like for Nick and for Justin and for all those guys that were there, spending the whole day there, and then going through all that. But, I just thought it was a solid, decent show. Not. I don't think it's as bad as its rep is getting, but okay. not that bad.
Okay. What was your favorite match?
I think I probably had to go with a lot of the other people and say that the women's triple threat match was definitely the best. I thought those three really put on, knew they were trying to put on, they had to deliver, because there were a lot of expectations. And, I know a lot of people were, kind of upset that Charlotte retained, but, I think Sasha will get her shot. And, the one I was really impressed with throughout the match, I know a lot of other people were impressed with, was Becky, because I knew people probably thought she was just like the third wheel in that match, but, she definitely impressed.
I'm a Becky junkie. I love her. So,
yeah, she's definitely, growing on me too. But other than that, I thought Jericho AJ was pretty good. I know a lot of people thought that was a little bit sloppy, and I know a lot of people were really, questioning the result with Jericho winning clean, but I thought it was a pretty good match. I thought the ladder match was good, the good surprise of Ryder winning. Pretty much that's, and then like I said, nothing else was terrible. I mean, Shane Taker was like just really long, 30 minutes. I mean, at the time it didn't feel like it, but as it was just going on and just building to that, big spot, it was, just did seem to kind of drag a bit. And then of course, the main event, which, which could be a whole podcast unto itself with that one. But, nothing really that I thought was, again, that was terrible, but nothing really, nothing on here that's going to be like a match of the year candidate for me.
Nick, what do you remember?
Well, first of all, I've gone back and rewatched the show.
So oh.
I've got
so you
I've
cheated.
I've got a very clear memory on all the matches at this point. I'll be honest, in terms of a live memory, as I told Justin, I think via text, it was a really weird thing because it was almost instantaneously, as soon as Becky tapped out in that triple threat, things got a little hazy for yours truly after that, and they kind of became clear again as they were doing the Reigns Triple H entrances. So those two portions of the show I'm very clear on, and the things that happened in between there from a live perspective are not as clear. But, I mean, in terms of thoughts, largely the same thing Steve was saying. I don't think it was a bad show by any stretch of the imagination, especially after going back and rewatching everything. I think all the matches, for the most part, were at least, decent. I think it was a weirdly booked card because I don't think there's a single result on that card that's really intended to make the fans happy, which is a weird thing to say for WrestleMania. You can disagree. I mean, you could say Zack Ryder in the opener, but your mileage may vary on on Zack Ryder.
Well, that's true, too, as we figured out the next night.
I think that one was more, them trying to pull, because I think a lot of people were either expecting, Kevin Owens to retain or, Sami Zayn to win the title. So I think Ryder winning, I think, caught a lot of people by surprise. And it was one of those things where it's like, you're kind of in shock at first, but then you're like, this is actually kind of cool. Them pulling this surprise out of nowhere. Ryder's, always been pretty well liked. I mean, he's obviously not as hot as he was back in 2011, but I think surprise factor definitely worked.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a big surprise. But like you said, it was kind of this thing where, at least in our immediate vicinity, the people we were sitting around in our little group that were there, like when it happened, you kind of don't react because you're just like, wait a minute, did that really just happen? Because you're kind of shocked by it. Mm. But I mean, other than that, like I said, I thought the matches were pretty good. I have to say, like, this was my fifth live Mania.
Wow. I've been
24, 27, 28, 30, and now 32. And I have to say, walking out, you kind of had the same feeling that you did after 27, which was kind of like, I enjoyed myself, but do I feel like I was part of something like that felt big and important? Probably not. It was not the feeling I had walking out of 24, 28, and 30. I'll put it that way.
Now that you said this, Nick, now I have to ask you the official main event question, because everybody who comes on for the first time has to answer a Triple H question.
Sure.
And you have to answer successfully.
Sure.
Or you're in the Jordan Duncan house.
I'll give
it
a shot.
Oh boy.
No. Actually, this is a win-win because a match is going to be answered anyway. So you were at Atlanta and Miami. So you were at both Triple H Taker matches.
Yes.
In your eyes live, which one was better?
The Hell in a Cell by the widest of margins.
Okay. I like that one too.
Not even close to me.
And as much as – and what's weird is
– go ahead.
I didn't think – no, that wasn't – I wasn't huffing because you cut me off. Okay, sorry. I only do that for Will. No, I'm only kidding. No, what's weird is going into those two shows, my feeling on Triple H breaking the streak, which I knew wasn't going to happen. I'm not retarded. But my hopes were more in Atlanta than they were in Miami. I didn't think he was going to beat Taker in the Cell. Yeah. But I thought he was going to beat him at the Georgia Dome. I did. Having said that, yeah, the Cell match is better. I agree. Not by, I mean, I don't think it's by a wide margin, but that's just, you know, my bias. But still, it, I mean, the Cell match was better.
You know, it's weird that you say that about because I kind of felt the same way, too, about I felt like Triple H had a better chance of actually winning at 27. But then at 28, I felt like the false finishes in that match were actually better and more believable.
Yeah, they were.
The super kick into the pedigree, I remember, like, Greg and I both sitting there next to each other thinking that was it. Like, we were both convinced that was the finish.
Yeah, and I thought so, too. I was literally about to shit myself if that was actually going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't watch that show live, unfortunately, but I was, you know, keeping up on it. And when I read that, I was, you know, you get that same feeling. You're like, holy crap, they're actually going to pull this out. But then, you know, Taker pulled it out in the end. But I agree with you, Scott. The 27 match, I thought, was a lot more – it seemed a lot more for likely that Triple H could win at that one because they're, you know, they hadn't really been – they hadn't feuded for quite a while before, you know, until then. So I think there was a real legit chance that, you know, if anyone could break the streak at that time, it would have been Triple H.
Right. Right. I thought so too. But anyway, Nick, I just wanted to ask that since you were at both matches, since you were both matches live. Yep. And I actually filled the gap because I was at 29. So,
So
now I'm feeling like the old man out. Cause I'm the only one here that hasn't been to a Mania yet.
Seriously? Oh, man. Where do you live, Steve?
I live in Maryland.
Oh, okay. I was probably near you in the summer. This summer, I was in Baltimore, D.C. in July. And you haven't been to at least a SmackDown pay per view because there's like there've been like 800 at the First Mariner Arena. I always felt like the Baltimore Arena was like the official SmackDown pay per view arena. I feel like they always went. In fact, the next vault that JR and I do, the No Way Out 06, was actually there.
Or at least a WCW show, because Baltimore was a hot WCW.
I know, there was like, haven't there been like 12 bashes there or something?
Yeah,
crazy.
You would think, but honest hand to God, you know, last year Payback was in Baltimore. That was legit the first ever pay-per-view I ever went to in my entire life.
Wow.
I mean when Mania 29 was in was at MetLife, you know, that I was seriously debating, thinking about, you know, should I pony up the cash to go? But at the time, I was kind of in the middle of transitioning jobs. I was like,
I understand. Oh, trust me, Steve, I understand. But you would have had a blast. We would have loved to have had you in the tailgate. That would have been fantastic.
Trust me. I've been, you know, keeping up with you guys and seeing the ones you've been going to. I was like, God, I really wish I could get to one of those. But
we'll have to come down and hook up for some crabs then at a fine crab establishment. In Baltimore.
I'll say this. I'll appreciate that. But I'll say this. If I know, you know, Philly's been rumored for a future Mania. And if that does happen, I'll definitely
we're going to blow that city up. And you got to come up, Duke.
You have to talk to the wife about that one.
We can watch Temple football or something.
No, if I came to Baltimore, I'd want to go see all the sites from the Serial podcast, but that's just my fascination. So,
yeah. All right. So we get out of that show, and the big rumor, the big kind of culture, I guess you could say, leading up to 32 was that 32 was going to be the big, you know, friggin' Attitude Era orgasm where we were going to have money shots of all over the place, Sean, you know, and Steve and Rock and all these guys, and it's going to be, we're going to blow out nostalgia. And then the next night on Raw, all right, we got to start talking about now and the guys now and stop leaning on all these guys to come back every year so we can fill 115,000 seat buildings. And I have to say, the next night on Raw, I did feel that way. And I have to say, and the one guy we need to talk about first, since and it's been what now, 3 weeks. The one guy we have to talk about, obviously, first is Roman Reigns, your new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Like him or hate him, pissed off or not pissed off, he's champ, and we got to suck it up and deal with it or watch something else. And he's actually been perfectly fine in these 3 weeks since Mania. The line that gets me every time is, I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy, I'm the guy.
Exactly.
Which is pretty much him telling everybody, guess what, I have the belt, and suck it if you don't like it. And good for him. Good for him. You know what I mean? I've been... Because it's a weird situation. Steve, do you think he's a bad wrestler?
I mean, he's not, you know, one of the greatest of all time, but I don't think he's terrible. I mean,
he's a typical power guy.
Exactly. When you spend, you know, 2 or 3 years like he did with, you know, two very great wrestlers like Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, I mean, you can't help but get better, you know?
Makes perfect sense. Nick, what do you think? Do you think he's a bad wrestler, good wrestler?
No. I in the ring, I think he's very good, honestly. I think the problem is in terms of presentation and promos and you know, I think that all the things that the company finds appealing about him are none of the things that the audience finds appealing about him. Mm-hmm. In that he got popular and got really heated up when he was kind of the silent badass killer of the Shield. And at a certain point, the company decided he needs to be cutting John Cena-esque suffer and succotash promos, and it killed what interest the fans had in him. I think Reigns is a great performer when they let him be, you know, more himself. I think the last 3 weeks have been a vast improvement. And I thought the last 3 weeks before Mania, where he started just kind of silently coming after Triple H, that was a vast improvement. I think they've tried to repair some of the damage. I just wonder if it was, you know, too little too late for in terms of him being a fan favorite. Obviously, I think the potential for a heel turn is huge there, but
it is. I agree.
That's another debate. You know.
Yeah, and we'll get more into that in the coming shows because we don't know if the trigger's going to be pulled on that yet. It could be.
Right. You know what he reminds me of?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this, and you know, kind of the, you know what he reminds me of? Diesel. How, you know, when he came in at 93. You know, as Sean's bodyguard, and he's been, you know, he was a silent guy. He, you know, beat everybody down, you know, and then 94, he, you know, started getting over for being a badass and, you know, just beating people up. And then he gets the title and he's the guy, and all of a sudden, and now he's pretty much like, he just pretty much becomes the corporate champ, you know, a corporate champion. You know, he says everything that made him special in 94, they pretty much just took away from him in 95, and his reign, you know, tanked because of it. Now, granted, he didn't have the best opponents in the world, you know, through that reign, but still, I mean, if he had been allowed to maintain what got him over in 94, his reign in 95 might have been slightly better. Then you remember when they took the belt off him, and then as 96 turned, he got that back and got over again to the point that when he went to WCW, and we know what happened.
Right.
And I see the exact same thing now in Roman Reigns. He was a silent badass, you know, monster in the Shield. They split up. He turns face. They make him do these weird, you know, promos, like Nick said, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the fans start turning on him. And then, you know, like you said, these last few weeks where he's, you know, kind of they're trying to repair him for that. It's like they're trying to make him, you know, the badass again, much like, you know, Diesel did in 96. So I think it's a very, very interesting parallel.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Nick?
The comparison I've been using is Goldberg, because I feel like it's the same thing where when Goldberg came into WWE, it was clear that Vince or whoever didn't understand really the appeal of the Goldberg character. Because within 2 weeks, you had Goldberg out there cutting 10-minute in-ring promos, which he never would have done in WCW, not when he was at his hottest anyway. And so I feel like it's the same thing with Reigns. Like, Reigns should be protected in terms of he shouldn't be doing a whole lot of selling. He should be presented, you know, as a badass monster, and he's not. I don't think they know how to book that silent badass character at a main event level. Not as a babyface, anyway.
I think the problem there is that they feel that as the guy, he has to be out there, you know, cutting, you know, these promos. And you're right, they don't know how to keep him, you know, this, you know, silent assassin essentially, and let him get over like he was back when he was, you know, a part of the Shield.
Yep.
So the night after Mania, We need a new number one contender because Triple H, you know, the good, honest man that he is, does not want his rematch, even though he deserves one, which he obviously will never get. So he'll never, well, nah, he'll never. I have a feeling he may do it at, like, on a Raw or something, and that may trigger something else, but whatever. I don't think that's going to happen. In any event, we need a new number one contender. So we have four guys. Now, this is where WWE is almost daring the fans to boo. All right, you want to boo Roman Reigns? Fine, we're going to put a match of four guys you like. Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, AJ Styles, and Cesaro. All right, you bastards, I dare you to boo. Go ahead, boo. These are the guys you piss and moan that we screw over all the time. Go ahead, boo. I loved it. I loved it. Couldn't boo any of them. Maybe Jericho, but, I mean, who cares? It's only Jericho. And, of course, the win went to AJ Styles, so he is facing Roman Reigns next Sunday in Chicago. Thumbs up, thumbs down for that pick, Nick, because you could have gone for anybody. I know a lot of people. Now we're ranking the guys. Who gets screwed the least? You know, because Cesaro, I think, is going to get his moment. I think he will. Everybody could be doom and gloom at all they want. I think he is going to get his shot. But AJ's the one that's got the smaller window. So I think he needs his shots now. What do you think about that?
I love the choice of AJ Styles. I don't know that I agree on the smaller window, because you got to remember Cesaro's not getting any younger. Like
That's true, too. I mean, AJ's a little older. He's, what, 38, and Cesaro's, what, 30?
I think mid-30s on Cesaro, but I'm not professing to be an expert on Cesaro. So
no, I'm going to check right now.
But that's part of the problem. Like, as much as I love WWE actively recruiting, you know, the long time...
All right, he's 35.
35, yeah.
So I stand corrected. Wow. All right. Okay. I'll be honest. I didn't think he was that old. Okay.
It was the male pattern baldness that should have given him. That's just my thought. But
most people just look old immediately.
but no, in terms of them like recruiting all these long term indie guys, that's kind of the problem. Is by the time they get to the E, or by the time they spend a couple years in NXT, they're starting to get up there in age. I mean, even someone like Sami Zayn is not. I mean, he is not a 22-year-old rookie. You've probably only got 5 to 6 years in terms of Sami Zayn's prime. Kevin Owens the same way. These guys have been doing it a long time. Yeah.
Sami Zayn's 31. Owens is definitely under 30.
Is he?
He's 31. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
he's,
I was going to say, I knew that he was pretty close to the same age.
AJ, I think, is 38.
Yeah, AJ's getting up there.
From Gainesville, sucker.
Yep, Gainesville, GA. But no, I love the choice of AJ, and I think it's a great choice because it's a dude who has been in big match situations in terms of in front of packed crowds over in Japan. He's a guy who can, you know, serve in multiple roles, and a guy who will probably actively help Reigns get better by being in the ring with him. Not right. saying that wouldn't have been the case for Jericho or Owens or anybody else, but you know, AJ brings something different to the table, and the fans are genuinely behind him.
Right.
And he's the only, like, true babyface that's been a sustained television presence that was in that match. Cesaro was just coming back.
Right.
Owens is a heel, but half the crowd loves him. And then you have Jericho. The only minor complaint you can make is if AJ Styles is going to be the number one contender, why is he losing at Mania? But that's another topic for another day.
I didn't get that either, but I don't think anybody cares at this point.
No, it's just... No. You know, you in terms of believability, if you want to believably present Styles as a threat to Reigns, why is he, you know, 2-2 against Chris Jericho? You know, that's kind of... But everybody's 50-50, so you can't really complain.
Yeah. What do you think, Steve? What do you think of Styles in this spot?
I definitely agree it is a thumbs up. You know, it's funny, you talk about, you know, the age of these guys. If you notice... Like you said, these guys, they're not getting younger. They're not spring chickens anymore. They're getting up there. You know, guys like AJ and Jericho, who can still go. I mean, we've seen it happen, but they're not getting younger, and they're eventually, you know, they're going to have to stop sometime. And I think the problem there is that all the guys that they have in NXT that are young, that they have, you know, long-term plans for, aren't ready to get to that main event spot. So that's why they have to go with guys like Jericho. And, you know, not to say that AJ hasn't deserved it, because I mean, like Nick said, he's been so consistently over ever since he debuted back at the Rumble, I mean, he's getting, you know, some of the biggest pops, you know, of anybody in there, and which is, you know, amazing to think about, considering, you know, this guy was, you know, such a, you know, the TNA darling for all those years, and for him to just come in and get, you know, be essentially positioned almost as one of the number one, you know, number two or number three babyface, it's quite amazing.
Right.
I think it was, you know, a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads on that decision, especially after, you know, Styles lost at Mania. And a lot of people thought maybe Jericho would have been the better choice just because, you know, he is, you know, we think he's a heel, but he's, you know, the kind of guy that can work his ass off to get heel heat on himself and take it off of Reigns. And obviously, you know, he'll work a good match with Reigns, but not that Styles won't. I'm sure, you know, that's going to be a really good match. It'll really test Roman to see if he is ready to be the top guy and to be, you know, a good worker in the ring. So, you know, I have no problem with it. And I think, like you said, Scott, Cesaro's going to get his chance. You know, it looks like they're finally going to get behind him.
Mm.
You know, we'll have to wait and see what happens at, you know, Payback with him. But, you know, he's been a guy that for, you know, last few years we've been asking, you know, why are they not, you know, pushing this guy? You know, he's got, you know, everything they want. So,
oh God, Stone Cold Steve Austin has been beating the Cesaro drum for what feels like 3 years now in his podcast.
Honestly, so. Yeah, every podcast he says something about Cesaro.
Yeah,
and he definitely also makes a point to say something about Cesaro when the podcasts are televised, when they're on the network.
Yes,
he definitely makes a point to say something about it. So,
I can't blame him. I mean, the guy.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
You know, amazingly gifted, you know, for a guy his size, and it's like, you know, how are they dropping the ball so badly with him?
One thing about AJ being there live, I just wanted to throw in there, he did a great job in that arena of making it feel like a huge moment for him being number one contender. Before he left to go backstage, I'm pretty sure he high-fived literally every single fan that was within arm's reach.
Right.
I don't just mean at ringside, I mean up and down both ramps, into the production area on the hard camera side,
right?
High-fiving the guys who were in the risers and stuff. I mean, he acted like he was about to break down emotionally, and I'm guessing that was just a great, you know, sell job on his part, but it actually made the moment feel bigger than your average number one contendership match.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. We're now going full bore on the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens feud, and they will have a straight up singles match at Payback. They've wrestled twice in NXT. The first time Owens took the NXT title. The second time did it end in a no contest, right? The second one?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
the second one ended
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, that was the night that Samoa Joe debuted.
Yeah. And then Sammy had to, you know, sit out that what seemed like an injury for forever. I think this feud will go multiple pay-per-views. What are your thoughts on Kevin Owens at the moment, Steve? I'll start with you. Let's talk about him for a second. Had a great run as Intercontinental Champion. Him and Ambrose had multiple matches that were fucking great. I was at TLC in December in Boston, and that match was fantastic. What is your thoughts on him at the moment?
He's in kind of a weird spot, I think. Like you said, you know, he had the good run as champion, you know. That feud with him and Ambrose was so great. I mean, I remember watching that, you know, that match they had at the Rumble, you know, that legitimately could be, you know, match of the year candidate. And he's in, like I said, a weird spot because it seems like he's got this, you know, feud going with Shane. And, you know, it's like, because he always, you know, the last, you know, few weeks he said, you know, Shane's had it out for him and, you know, going forward. And I'm interested to see how this feud goes. I mean, obviously these two guys know each other, you know, like clockwork, you know, given their days back in, you know, the Indies and Ring of Honor and NXT. So I'm sure, you know, they're always great. You know, every time they get together, it's going to be something, you know, special. But it is going to be interesting to see where both guys go from here. And especially Owens, because he seems like a guy who's wanting to break through and be a top guy, but it seems like they're still kind of holding back on him I know, you know, from stuff I've read, you know, a lot of people think it's because of his look, and yeah, you know, I don't know if that matters at this point, because, you know, he's proven that he can go in the ring. I mean, we saw it last year with that great three-match series with Cena.
Right.
And I don't know, it's just you just have a lot of guys in weird state of flux going, you know, coming out of Mania, and I think he's definitely at the top of the list in terms of, you know, where they're going to go with them.
Hmm. Steve, what do you think? I've been an Owens guy from the beginning. I have two t-shirts. I love the guy.
Which t-shirts?
The first one.
Yeah.
The masking tape one.
Yeah.
And then that special edition one that they made last year when he had that house show in Montreal.
Oh, that's a sweet
one. Special
okay.
T-shirt. Mm. And, you know, me being a Bruins fan, I fucking hate the Canadians. But sorry, Aaron George. but the t-shirt was badass. So, what are your thoughts on him and his standing at the moment?
I'm a huge Kevin Owens fan. I was asking what t-shirts, because as big a fan as I am, I hate most of his merchandise right now. Except for the fight shorts. I'm actually wearing the fight shorts at the moment. But anyway.
Oh, nice.
No, I love Kevin Owens. I am a bit concerned about, you know, his long-term prospects, because as we all know, the dastardly Kevin Dunn is currently preventing Triple H from instituting the new golden age of professional wrestling.
Exactly.
So, you know, Kevin Owens would seem to be a target of that if that were actually the case. But I don't know. I kind of feel like they don't really have a firm long-term direction.
We have a Kevin Owens versus Kevin Dunn match and can knock his fucking woodchuck teeth out of his mouth.
Yeah, no
asshole.
No, that's what I said about, you know, the one thing kind of holding them back might be his look.
Yeah. Well, one thing that you mentioned, though, about the Shane deal is I kind of felt like they were doing a similar thing in NXT for a little bit, where it felt like they were building up a physical angle between him and Regal.
Yeah.
Almost kind of directly aping the Cornette angle from Ring of Honor. And so
right.
I feel like Shane's actually a better choice than Regal for that at this point, because Shane has already shown a willingness to get back in the ring, where I feel like Regal might be a little bit done. So they can actually have that as a long-term direction if, you know, once you do the Zayn angle, maybe do something physical with Shane after that. And that could be a good way to get Owens over in a much bigger way, and, you know, eventually set the stages for some kind of maybe anti-hero babyface turn.
Hmm. I've been saying since August, I think he's winning Money in the Bank. He may get usurped by Cesaro, but
I was about to say Cesaro, yeah.
I think Cesaro can get a title shot without it, because you know what it is? This is my take on this, and I definitely want your guys' opinions. To me, anybody can get a title shot anytime they want. Look at AJ Styles. He just won a match and got it. He doesn't need a briefcase. The Money in the Bank, to me, and I've noticed this over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, the briefcase works better with somebody who has a gimmick that will make it special. I have said all along that the one guy that I think would make an awesome Money in the Bank briefcase holder is Dean Ambrose. He could leave, like, sandwiches in it and, you know, pornos and everything. I think it'd be fucking hilarious. It's like if Piper or Pillman had the Money in the Bank briefcase. You open up and there's, you know, freaking sex toys and all sorts of, like, weird, bizarre shit in it. I think that's the briefcase itself is perfect for a gimmick for somebody that'll have fun with it. Cesaro is not that kind of guy. I think Cesaro could just win something and then win the belt. Kevin Owens having the briefcase would be kind of cool. Just my opinion. Nick, if you had to put money down on who was going to win Money in the Bank right now, who's it going to be and why?
Oh, man. I'm going to lean Cesaro, simply because I think, because let's see, what do you got? You got Payback and Extreme Rules between now and Money in the Bank, correct?
Right, yep.
I think you can do two Owens Zayn matches at those one of each pay-per-view, continue their feud into Money in the Bank, and then do some kind of angle where one of them winds up costing the other the match, and you know, continue that feud for probably one more pay-per-view after that.
Right.
And plus, we're talking about gimmicks. If Cesaro is going to continue with his James Bond-inspired look right now, that briefcase would be a pretty sweet
That is true.
To that.
And he could switch it up. I mean, Sandow switched it up, and he went like old school, you know.
Yeah.
Old school leather briefcase of the
1970s. Like a black gunmetal briefcase, you know,
yeah.
Very, very Bond-esque. I'd be down with that.
What do you think, Steve? Do you agree, disagree? Do you have a different guy in mind? Or
I definitely agree. I think, you know, with the, you know, current thing that Cesaro has going on, that the briefing specifically sued him. I'm kind of torn because I almost feel like the guy who wins Money in the Bank will be dictated more on if Reigns goes heel or stays a face. Because I feel like if he stays a face, I could see Kevin Owens winning it, because I think, like you said, he, you know, could have fun with that briefcase. But if Reigns goes heel, I almost kind of want to say that Ambrose is going to win the briefcase. You know, could kind of, you know, pay off, you know, the, you know, the, you know, the brother angle between the two of them. And although I'm torn on it, because I feel like if Reigns goes heel, they're probably going to do something with him and Ambrose anyway. So it probably wouldn't necessitate him needing the briefcase.
And let's not forget the piece of Seth Rollins coming back on the table at some point.
That's exactly right.
No, I never really thought of that, Steve. That's actually pretty good. I never thought of that Ambrose could win it if Reigns turns heel. That's fascinating. That's a great. Let's go to. We're going to take a break. I want that to sit in the air for a minute because I like that idea. I never really thought of that. That now you can open up. I don't think Rollins will win a briefcase 2 years in a row. But I like that. Actually, it wouldn't have been 2 years in a row. Second time in 3 years. But I like that thought that now, kind of, if Reigns turns heel, then it opens up the door for Ambrose again. Interesting. Let's take a break here on Main Event. Scott Griscolo, Nick Duke, Steve Riddle. We'll continue talking about, you know, the state of the company at the moment as we're in between pay-per-views. WrestleMania in the rearview mirror. And Payback is on the horizon from the Rosemont Horizon. Now it's called the Allstate Arena in Chicago. More Main Event after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Voices in my head, they count to me, they understand, they talk to me.
And welcome back, Police Be Nation, to the main event. Scott Criscolo with my debut guys tonight, Steve Riddle and Nick Duke, who's got his... Do you like D'Von Dudley? Because some of those old, on the Rise and Fall of ECW DVDs, wearing a Georgia jersey. You ever notice that?
I did not notice that. That's interesting.
He's got a home jersey on. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I know AJ's a big fan. I mean, AJ has a, he usually is wearing a Georgia hat in a lot of his appearances and stuff. And then obviously, you know, Goldberg would be
the most
famous one of all. But, yeah. You know.
I just thought of that when you're on tonight. So, PlaceBeNation.com is your home for everything pop culture. Premier podcast brand number two. PWO's greatest wrestler ever, the premier podcast brand, Chris Zellner, Dylan Hales, here to discuss the top 50 on their greatest wrestler ever list on the Pro Wrestling Only message board at prowrestlingonly.com. I believe they both have Triple H number two. I love
Hulk. It's a Hulk Hogan.
I love Warren, those guys. Yeah, anyway, check it out. It's pretty awesome.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. And number three is Goldberg. Four is Kamala, and I think five is Necro Butcher. So,
Jesus.
No, I'm serious. I'm only kidding. No, it's actually very good. Check it out. Chris and Dylan, top 50 on the greatest wrestler ever list that they did on the Pro Wrestling Only message board at prowrestlingonly.com. Discussed a lot of the debates and discussions, but they have 50-1, and then if you pan a little bit further down on the page, you'll get 100-51. So check out both. JR and I are doing our Vintage Vault refreshes. Today we posted the January 27th, 1990 episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. Glenn Butler with his Wednesday walk around the web. Dave Musgrave continues his In Search of Five-Star Matches, Part 3. Mr. Brian Bayless with your Raw Rundown from the other night. Ryan Schmock continues his Top 10 Dark Shadows episodes of all time. I didn't think anybody still watched that show. The Parejas Increíbles are back. Stacy and Matt, slowly but surely, continue to roll out their greatest wrestler ever ballots. Episode number 4, dealing with numbers 44 to 34. And We Miss the 90s is back. Of course, back when the site first started, Mr. Rosero, my PIC, and Jen Engel talked about things in the 90s. However... Chris Jordan stepped in for Ms. Engel, who's on sabbatical, and they talk about, guys, the mall. Who doesn't love the mall? What's the big mall in Atlanta, Nick? Oh,
Linux.
I went there ages ago.
Linux probably is what
you're thinking. My brother lived in Conyers for a short time in the early
90s. Oh, wow. Yeah, my cousin lived in Conyers for a couple
years. In the heat of the night, used to be shot like down the street from his house.
Yep, absolutely.
So, in fact, I got a great Georgia story, I got to tell you. But anyway, so We Miss the 90s is back, and they talk about the mall. Don't forget, on the right side of the page at PlaceBeNation.com, you can check out all the podcasts, of course. Click on Amazon.com's link. You'll go right to Amazon, buy anything you need, and we get a little taste. We get a little scratch back to help us run the site. So no price increases or anything. Just go to PlaceBeNation.com first, check out all of our great stuff. Then click on the Amazon link. It'll go right to Amazon, buy your stuff, and we get a little kickback. So, also, check out our free ebook. JR and I, of course, redid our Vintage Vaults during the Federation era. So you'll go right to both. You can go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble. By the way, it's still number one on the pop culture ebook list. Volume 1 takes you from WrestleMania 1 through Survivor Series 1992. And we'll have a second one coming out soon as well. Actually, we're going to have a myriad of them over the next few years, but... we're working on number two at the moment. So, PlaceBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture.
Hey, I want to throw in real quick. If you
yes.
Coming very soon, and an undetermined date in the future, will be the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast.
Ah, yes.
Greg and I are going to bring back, if you've ever read any of the comics coverage, we're going to bring it back, but as a podcast instead of a column, because at a certain point we realize what a waste of time it was to type up a conversation rather than just record it. So we're going to do that at some point in the near future.
Oh, it's fantastic. Two comics things I want to bring up quick.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on all the Marvel Star Wars titles?
Love them. Almost across the board.
The only one that I was 50-50 on was Leia. I thought she was a mush face.
It was okay. The miniseries in general have been not as strong as the ongoing series, but I say this without any hesitation – That Darth Vader solo title is actually my favorite book in comics right now.
Oh my god, Invader Down, it's fantastic.
Not just Vader Down, but the ongoing Darth Vader. I think it's on issue 19 now.
Yeah,
is fantastic.
It is.
It you know it's a great series when they can take moments from the prequel trilogy and make them seem better in retrospect.
Exactly. You know what they should make a movie for? You know what they how they should make? Let me say that again. You know what they should make an anthology movie out of, Nick? That 6-issue run with Lando. Tell me that would be a fucking sweet movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely be amazing.
Sorry, Steve, we're doing comic nerdness here. Sorry.
No. Those Star Wars books have been amazing, and they've even propelled Marvel into an even stronger market share. Because
I agree.
When you look at the top 10 books every month now, they're putting like 3 Star Wars books in the top 10 every month.
Yeah.
In addition to all their superhero stuff. So
right
now, the books that are selling are Walking Dead, Batman, and a shit ton of Star Wars. So that's what's selling.
We'll talk about DC another day because I know they're doing their 80th reboot in fucking May. So they're like WCW in 2000. Let's just keep rebooting. Oh God!
It feels like I'm on a podcast with Ben Morse right now.
Ben Morse is still my favorite person on the planet, even though he decide he'll go to Dallas to visit Justin, but he only lives like an hour away from me here, and then won't visit me. Very sad.
He and I have been at 2 manias, and I think I waved at him from a distance. I think that's the closest.
It's kind of like my relationship with the Road Warriors.
I was like, hey.
Coach bag.
It was especially weird because, if I remember correctly, I think he was hanging out with Andrew Reich. And Andrew Reich came over to say hello, and Ben just kind of awkwardly stood at a distance.
Oh, my God.
If I remember correctly.
And not many people are more awkward than Reich. Nah, Reich is awesome. Anyway, now, Steve, I was in your neck of the woods last summer. I was in Baltimore. I was in the Beltway, if you will, in July. And I was driving. I don't remember the name of the street, but I was driving near the convention center. And it was Otakon, or one of those cons where people, a lot of cosplayers. And let me tell you something. There were some pretty awesome costumes, but let's put it this way. There were some females that probably should not have worn what they wore. Let's put it that way.
It didn't quite
fit very well. Sorry.
I can only imagine.
You're 40 and you shouldn't be dressing like Sailor Moon. But any event, Baltimore was great. I loved visiting Baltimore. Now, unfortunately, I was there because I saw Billy Joel at M&T.
Sweet.
So, which is a great looking football stadium, by the way. Of course, M&T, for those that don't know, home of the Ravens. Orioles were not home, so I only got to drive by Camden Yards. The Orioles were not home. We're trying to get to Baltimore this summer because I want to catch an Orioles game. But Baltimore is a great city. It's got its spots, if you know what I mean. But I think Baltimore is a great city. Now, do you live close to Baltimore, or are you in the burbs?
I actually don't live in Baltimore. I live outside, closer to Frederick, Maryland.
Oh,
I live in the town of Mount Airy. So we're only about 20, 30 minutes away from Baltimore.
Okay.
So we're not that far away.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was about to say, have you ever been to the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs?
I can't say that I have. It's funny I'll say this. I lived in Maryland for a long time. I'm actually not the biggest crab eater. I'll have them every now and then, but they're not usually my go-to type of food because I'm not really a seafood eater. So
there was a great Italian place that I found. We ate there, me and the doctor and his wife and Armento and the doctor's daughter. Great Italian place. I can't remember the name of it now. Great macaroni, good pasta.
Olive Garden.
It was Olive Garden. Out of your mind. Only you hillbillies eat Olive Garden.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, those are shots fired.
Now I know what the count is. I got it.
It's funny. When I went to Payback last year, I got into the city. It was, I guess, the Orioles had actually played that afternoon, and I was getting into the city right as the game had finished. So I was having to deal with all that traffic, and yeah, never fun. But yeah, I remember before the show, I just kind of hung in around the Inner Harbor just for the day because it was, not that terrible a day out. So, but it was funny just sitting in one of the restaurants there and just seeing all the people wearing all the different wrestling t-shirts. It was Because like I said, that was, you know, my first ever pay-per-view, and that was my first live show since 2004. I had gone to a show because in Frederick, his home to the Frederick Keys, which is the farm team for the Orioles.
Right.
And during a brief time in the mid-2000s, you know, during the summer, right before they would go to Baltimore for, like, a show, they would stop by the stadium that the Keys play in.
Oh,
and they
okay.
Hold the show there. And in 04, me and my dad went to see a house show at Frederick at the Harry Grove Stadium, it's called. So it was, you know,
cool.
It was in July 2004. It was right after Vengeance. And it was, you know, kind of cool. I got to see a lot of those guys for the first time. And, you know, I can't say I did get to see, you know, He Who Must Not Be Named. So, but, you know,
right. The Voldemort that we can't talk about anymore. But, I didn't go to Vengeance, and Vengeance was in Hartford. Vengeance was only like 45 minutes from here. I didn't go to Vengeance. But, anyway, I love the Beltway. So I'm definitely visiting your neck of the woods again. Frederick Keys, by the way, were not home either. Nobody was home. We had to dig up the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. But if you ever get a chance to go, Steve, it's pretty awesome. They're good. It's a fun ballpark. And
while you're mentioning minor league baseball, mm-hmm. You ever make it down to the Atlanta area, even if you don't get to go to the Gwinnett Stadium, try and catch a radio broadcast. The Gwinnett Braves.
Oh, the Gwinnett Braves.
The Gwinnett Braves lead announcer, Tony Schiavone.
Tony Schiavone, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
I definitely want to. Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Now, Nick, I have a story for you on my traveling travail. We'll get back to wrestling in a minute. This is what I do. Anytime the running joke on Main Event is anytime Roman Reigns is the main topic, we usually avoid it. But no. We'll get back in a minute. But in 1993, I told you my brother lived in Conyers.
Yep.
We were down visiting him and his
crazy. My cousin was probably in Conyers at the same time.
Yeah. His then wife and his kids. We were visiting and we went to the Congress Center.
Yep.
And now this was June, so this was – or May. So this was like 4 months after Flair left WWE. This was after the Raw match where he lost to Perfect.
Yeah.
And I was in – and WCW's offices were there.
Yep.
And I looked through a glass
door. Down by the old Omni.
I was this close to walking through the door because there was the glass door that had the WCW World Championship Wrestling on the door. And I looked down the hall, and I'm not fucking with you. I definitely saw the back of Ric Flair's head because I saw this big mane of blonde.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God, the man is there. I should just walk in and, you know, hump his leg like a dog. But I loved it. And I went to – actually, there was a I wish I could remember the name of the restaurant. It was kind of like a Bobby Valentine. It was like Rack and Roll or something like that. It was like a sports bar. And it was owned by like Craig Sager and I think like Lex Luger owned a piece of it or a bunch of Atlanta.
Was
like,
it Jock and Jill's?
Jock and Jill's. Thank you.
Yep.
Jock and Jill's.
Yep.
And they
Jock and Jill's is actually not there anymore.
Oh, bummer.
It's good. Taco Mac kind of took it over.
Oh.
You know, corporately. So
yeah,
the Jock and Jill's used to be a big hangout spot, man. It was awesome.
No, the food was great. And in this Jock and Jill's, they were displaying wrestling belts.
Yep.
And they were displaying the NWA titles that the Road Warriors won in 88 when they beat the Midnights. And when they were switching over from one U.S. title to the next, when Nikita Koloff smacked Luger in the face and cracked the...
Yep.
That belt was on display, the cracked U.S. title belt. It was pretty awesome. And the food was great. So anyway, I want to say both places that you boys live in highly enjoyed my time there. I've not been down to Atlanta since. But I definitely am going to go down now because I'll just knock on yours and Chad's door and all you guys all at the same time.
Well, if you're in Atlanta proper, you'll probably have a little bit easier time tracking Chad down. I'm about an hour and 45 minutes southwest of Atlanta.
Okay. Well, I'll wear my I used to have a Gerald Riggs jersey, so I'll just wear my
nice
Falcons throwback.
Buy you a Jamal Anderson jersey and put a little powdered sugar under your nose.
And do the real Dirty Bird.
Do the cosplay, so, you know.
Oh, God.
Potter, dude. Oh, shit. Anyway. So you must have been literally the day you found out that 27 was going to be there. You literally were on the phone, like, right then and there.
I mean, it's so funny because Greg and I had talked about it for years about, like, you think we'll ever get one in Atlanta? You think we'll ever get one in Atlanta? And the day they announced it, we were so excited, and I looked him square in the eye, and he'll tell you this, it happened. You have to understand, at the time, I was in college, and probably my two least favorite wrestlers on the face of this freaking planet were John Cena and The Miz.
And The Miz.
I looked him square in the eye, and I said, watch the main event be fucking John Cena and The Miz. And sure enough, it was John Cena and The Miz.
That is hilarious.
you reverse jinx yourself on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but it's typical Atlanta. You get something awesome, and then you find a way to screw it up.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Yeah. Having said that, Steve, I don't see why M&T Bank Stadium couldn't host a WrestleMania. I mean, it's a nice building.
It is a nice building. I did go there. When was it? I think it was like 2000. Can't remember the last time, but I do remember going there one time for a game. And me and my dad, actually, when my dad used to work at Sprint, we actually got to sit in the skybox. So we actually
nice.
You know, got – yeah, it was really cool. So I think it was the year that the Ravens won their first Super Bowl when they beat the Giants in
35.
Yeah, so I can't remember if I've been back there before. But yeah, it's a nice – you know, it's a really nice stadium. And I mean, yeah, I don't know why, you know –
there's plenty of parking for tailgating and I mean, there's plenty of hotels around and – you know, they could do the Hall of Fame at the, at the First Mariner Arena. I mean, it's not ridiculously close, but it's not ridiculously far away either, you know.
I guess maybe their only fear is that since, you know, M&T Stadium and Camden Yards are so close together, they don't want to do it when there's, like, going to be an Orioles game, maybe? I really don't know.
WrestleMania almost always falls on the day of, like, literally the opening day of Major League Baseball season happens.
Yeah. They always try to put WrestleMania on the off day of the Final Four.
Yep, the off day of the Final Four, and typically there's only one game that Sunday night, and then real, like, the opening day for most of the league is the next day.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it was this year. The parking lot attendants were gearing up for a pretty long 48 hours because they had Mania on Sunday and then the Rangers opening day, I mean, literally
day.
Right next door, yeah. You know, the next day.
They're close together, right, Nick?
Oh yeah, yeah. We
AT&T and
the tailgate ball. Party was actually closer to the Rangers Park than it was to AT&T, and that's not to say it was very far away from AT&T. I mean,
right.
It was like a 10-minute walk, maybe. Granted, I rode a bike taxi to the stadium, but you know, that's another story. I feel like my exploits have been carried through the wind to various.
Well, the day after we had a great episode of the Place to Be podcast, and Mr. Rosero gave me all the details of your. We should be calling you Big Duke Busick because you pretty much you pretty much are. All you need is a little bowler. But
in my defense, it's not often a guy with two kids under two gets to cut loose. So
True.
I was fully taking advantage of
that. It sounded like you guys had a blast.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You guys definitely need to if 34 is in Philly, we're gonna burn that fucker to the ground.
I would be willing at this point. I haven't said a whole lot about it on the pages or anything, but, like, I literally had so much fun just doing that tailgate that I would consider just coming and doing the tailgate at some point.
Well,
even
if
they go to Mania.
I tell you, people ask me all the time, because pretty much from that weekend at the Meadowlands is where Place to Be Nation started. And people have asked me, and that was my second Mania, WrestleMania 29, 10 years after the first one, my first one. And everybody asks me, what was your favorite, what was your highlights of your weekend? Was it being inside, MetLife, 80,000 and everything? I said, the show was, No, the highlights for me were Madison Square Garden, for the Hall of Fame, and seeing Bruno get inducted, because Bruno was my dad's favorite wrestler, and my dad had just passed away that previous December, so it was very emotional for me seeing Bruno in the Hall. And then the next day, the tailgate, and meeting everybody, and it was, I mean, you guys see the picture on the page.
Yep.
It was an incredible day, and that, a couple months later, on my birthday, June 1st, 2013, here we are, Place to Be Nation launched. So, I'll be honest with you, WrestleMania 34 at the Link in Philly would be nice, but honestly, I would want us to try and get double the guys. I mean, I want us to have like 50 guys. I mean, that would
we had 23 paid at the 32 tailgate, and I feel pretty confident we had four or five others that just showed up to hang out.
Yeah,
we had close to 30. I want to say by the time all was said and done.
Yeah, I think
it was a great group.
Oh no, it seemed like you guys
looked like
passed.
Yeah, you looked like you had a lot of people there show up for that, and it looked like it was, a really fun time.
And my God, dude, we had more food and drink than you could eat or drink.
Yeah, so do we. We did so much.
Ridiculous.
Nah, if 34 in 2018 is in Philly, we're going to burn that shit bag to the ground. So we're stay tuned here to Place Me Nation for the next 18 months and figure out.
Well, I've already been told I've been tapped to play on the tailgate for 33 for those people who are
going down to Orlando. Super.
Yeah. Orlando's a lot shorter drive for us, honestly. Orlando's going to be a breeze compared to Dallas. We drove 12 hours. 12 hours there, 12 hours back. And it sucked.
Oh, my God.
God, it sucked.
I remember when I was, you know, not to go off topic here, but when I was, you know, little, we would drive down for summer vacation. We would drive down from here in Maryland. We would occasionally go to Daytona Beach for the summer. We drove, and that was a long drive. So I can only imagine what that kind of drive for you guys was.
The only drive I've ever been on longer than that one was when I was 9 years old. My mom and dad and I drove to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And we actually split that drive over 2 days.
Wow.
Wow.
That was intense.
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't make it to at least now at the stage of my life, I have all my big four covered. Last year I got the Rumble out of the way in Philly.
I'm missing a SummerSlam.
I got my SummerSlam out of the way last year in Brooklyn. I'll be back there this year in Barclays. And SummerSlam and Survivor Series I got out of the way in 2008 at up in Boston. So all right. Let's dive back into some other things going on in these few weeks since Mania as we head towards Chicago on May 1st. Let's talk about the tag situation. Of course, everybody loves New Day. We've had a myriad of debuts. The Enzo and Cassidy have debuted. And Steve Willey's in my favorite NXT team of all time, the Vaudevillains. And it'll be the Vaudevillains against Enzo and Cassidy at Payback to determine the number one contender. I am getting a good feeling that Vaudevillains are going to go on a run here. What do you think, Steve? I think the Vaudevillains are the team to beat. And I think they're going to beat New Day eventually.
Yeah, it definitely has been very interesting seeing this tag division just, you know, because going before, even going to the beginning of the year, you know, everyone said, you know, it seemed like, you know, it was felt just so played out, and you know, you're wondering, you know, what was left for the New Day. They were still, obviously they're still getting very big pops, but you know, you figured what was left for them. And yeah, seeing these, you know, the new teams come up, Enzo and Cass and the Vaudevillains, who I've recently just been going back and watching all the older NXT shows when since the network launched in 2014, which, although, you know, it's funny, they're posting all the old stuff. I'm kind of surprised they haven't posted any of the NXT shows from pre-network launch. So, like, all 2012, 2013. And
yeah, I agree, actually.
You know, because I want to see that stuff, to see these guys before, you know, because obviously we've been watching these last 2 years and seeing these guys develop. You know, I want to see those guys even before the network launched. I think that'd be really cool to kind of see that.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your question. Yeah, I think you know, Enzo Cass, I know a lot of people were, you know, wondering, you know, how their act would get over on the main roster, and you know, give them credit, they've gotten themselves over. I mean, you know, Enzo's, you know, great talker, and you know, Cassidy, he's, you know, a guy not as good as Cesaro, but a guy that, you know, has all the tools necessary to be, you know, a guy for the future. And they mesh well together, and obviously they've been friends for a long time, so they know their stuff. You know, they know each other very well. But yeah, they've been looking great. And as for the Vaudevillains, you know, when they made their debut, I was a little bit stunned because I don't remember hearing anything about them getting called up.
Me neither.
Felt like a bad omen because they dumped their debut on SmackDown like they did Tyler Breeze.
So right.
It felt like a bad, you know, like a weird, shaky start for those guys.
Yeah, I agree. But, and you wondered, you know, how their act would get over on the main roster, you know, because there's, you know, way, you know, different. But again, to their credit, they've, you know, been doing well. And like you said, you know, now these two new teams literally, you know, debut, and 3 weeks later, they're going to be on pay-per-view, you know, challenging for the titles. So I think it's, you know, great things are, you know, I think, coming between those teams. Now, who I think is going to win? The smart money thinks that Enzo and Cass have the better long-term future, but I think it seems like they're setting up for a feud with them and the Dudleys, so you know, I definitely have to agree with you, Scott. I think the Vaudevillains right now are the team that are probably going to take the division and run with it. Like, I could see them and New Day having some really good matches, and yeah, the promos between those two teams would be really interesting to see.
I agree. So I definitely like the Vaudevillains to win that match at Payback, and I think eventually down the line they'll beat New Day. Let's talk about the women for a minute. Charlotte will be defending the women's championship at Payback against Natalya. Of course, it's a rematch of Saskatoon, October 12th, 1992. We have Ric Flair in one corner and Bret Hart in the other. I don't know what difference that really makes, but are you guys surprised that Sasha and Becky are MIA? What do you think, Nick?
No, I think you have to resist the urge to build the entire division around exclusively those three women right now. And so I think it's a good play to get Natalya in there because they've wrestled twice on big show cards with the NXT takeover from last year and the Roadblock special from a couple months ago. And so they've proven they can have very good matches that will help to raise the profile of the division, continue to show that the approach to the division has changed, and also continue to build up Charlotte for the eventual, what I would assume is Sasha winning the title later this summer. So I think it's a good idea to kind of take Sasha and Becky, let them do other things for a little while, and let Charlotte, get more established as a dominant heel champ before you go back to Sasha and Becky.
What do you think, Steve?
I agree with that completely. I think since a lot of the focus these last few months have been on those three, I think it's nice to kind of see some, fresh, some other faces kind of mixed in. And I know a lot of people were really upset that Sasha didn't win at WrestleMania, but I think you said, they're saving her. It looks like, I think the smart money right now is her and Charlotte at SummerSlam with Sasha going over there and, taking control of the division. But I do agree. I think Charlotte's progression since winning the title last September has been really unique to watch. How she started as a face, really not getting over, and then, turning heel and adding her dad by her side. It's, she's got that. I mean, you can tell she's a flair because she's got that cockiness and arrogance that, her father had back in his day. And it's really interesting to see actually where they're going with them. I mean, it seems like they're kind of setting up Charlotte to maybe finally break away from him and strike out on her own. I don't know if she's going to stay a heel for that or if she's going to turn face. But, I'm really looking forward to this match with I mean, we know her and Natalya have great chemistry. I mean, we saw in the takeover match and then at Roadblock. So I'm very, very interested to see how this match goes. And, I think we might be seeing with these, I am glad that they got rid of the term divas and brought them back to, just calling it a women's division. I love that new belt. I mean, I know it's pretty much just a rip off of the main belt, but,
that's a good thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that they do kind of look like each other. I think the uniform.
It makes them seem like they're on the same level as the men.
Yeah,
exactly. Visually, that's the implication. So.
Right. I agree with that. And like I said, the women we got on the roster now, and obviously you're looking to NXT, and a lot of people are waiting in anticipation for when Bayley gets to call up to the main roster. But I'm looking forward to that match. I think it's going to be a good match, and I'm thinking that Charlotte will retain, but I think it will be I think bright things are ahead for the women's division.
Now, and we've talked about NXT a couple times, let's not forget that two nights earlier in Dallas, they had their own mini WrestleMania. And I thought that show top to bottom was exceptional.
That was definitely better than WrestleMania, I think.
I think a lot of people thought that. I think a lot of people going in thought that and didn't want to believe it, but
then it was.
Yeah, pretty much.
Being there live was amazing. Oh my god! Probably.
Oh, you went that? You guys?
Oh
went,
my god!
You went to that too?
Yes, I was there. Todd Weber and I sat together at that show.
T Web.
And it was fantastic. Probably one of my two or three favorite wrestling experiences I've ever had live. I mean, you can't oversell it. It was amazing.
Is American Alpha versus The Revival the tag team match of the year so far?
Yes.
I might have to agree with you on that.
I mean, so far this year, I mean, in the 4 months we've had, yeah. Because I love the New Day, love the guys, but their appeal is largely not in terms of putting on in-ring classics. You know, their appeal is their charisma and their promo and the entrance.
The gigantic cereal box.
You know, all the stuff they do outside of that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was great. Whereas American Alpha and The Revival both are just great in-ring performers.
Guys are incredible workers.
American Alpha is fantastic. The Revival are the closest thing to the Brainbusters we've seen in 20 years probably, and just they knocked it out of the park.
Jordan's a beast.
A beast. Oh, Greg Phillips has said this, and I kind of agree. He might already be the best hot tag guy in the company because nobody blasts out of that corner like Jason Jordan.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I was just saying, you know, because I mentioned about I've been watching the older NXT shows, and when Jordan was in that brief team with Ty Dillinger, you saw, you know, a little bit of that, and then when he formed American Alpha with Gable, you know, I don't know what it is, man. Gable, he's just, there's something about him that endears him to that NXT crowd, and
it's that goofy 2000-esque Kurt Angle charm. That's what it is. That's the closest. That's what I can say about it. I mean, it feels like that goofy comedy Kurt Angle character, and it works because it's just, he also backs it up with fantastic in-ring performances.
Absolutely, I agree, and I like the I can't remember who posted it on the Facebook page. The one about I think Scott, you guys have mentioned it on the PTB podcast about how the one picture of like if Charmel and Kurt Angle went through.
Oh, Charmel and Kurt Angle actually did go through their crazy monkey sex storyline.
Yeah, and gave birth to him. So, and you're right, he has a very good striking resemblance to Kurt. It's amazing. But yeah, I thought, I mean, that was a phenomenal tag match between those two. And I remember going in watching that show live. For a minute, I actually thought that the Revival were going to retain, just because I thought they were going to do the thing where having American Alpha chase them for a little bit. But give them credit, they're going to let American Alpha run with it, and they got a. I mean, you talk about pops, and Nick, obviously you being there can know they got a huge pop.
Massive.
when they won that match. So give them credit for really getting over as a team, and big things are ahead for both those teams. Yeah.
Those guys are massively. I mean,
everybody on that show is a fucking star.
Yeah.
I agree.
But when you're talking about something as simple as laying out the structure of a card, brilliant decision to open with that match, because it got the crowd, gave the crowd something they wanted, first of all, and set the tone for what was coming. I mean, just a brilliant, brilliant opening match.
Mm. I agree.
Is Nakamura a fucking beast or what?
Nakamura should be on the main roster right now.
Yeah.
Because, I agree.
Like we were saying earlier with the age thing, Nakamura, of all people, he's not a spring chicken. He doesn't have 10 years left in the tank, and they need to maximize every ounce of that dude while they can, because he has...
He's 36.
Superstar written all over him.
I really didn't think he was that old.
I didn't either.
No, he trained with Daniel Bryan back in 2000, whenever, shortly after Bryan started wrestling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's been around a while. That dude is amazing. Like, I don't care if he doesn't speak the language that well. Sometimes charisma means more than speaking
promos.
English.
And
right. It's amazing right now. And that crowd was eating out of the palm of his hand from the moment the first note of his music hit. Not even seeing him, just one note of music, and that crowd was into everything he did. And that dude is just, he's amazing. He's so unlike any performer they have in terms of his in-ring style and presentation that I hate to say can't miss, but there's no way the company can miss on this guy.
And,
no.
Oh, good, Steve.
No, I agree. I mean, and I'll be perfectly frank here. I've not seen any of Nakamura before TakeOver. So I wasn't sure what to expect from him going in. And after that match with Sammy, man, all I can think of was, is this guy is money. He is He is a star in the making. Like you said, he's got charisma. He's got, you know, ability. He reminds me, because you mentioned about how he doesn't speak the language, but he doesn't need that to be charisma, you know, charismatic. He reminds me a lot of, and the only reason I say it is because I've been listening back to the old podcasts, and I'm in the 2001. He reminds me a lot of Tajiri.
Yeah.
Guy who, you know, obviously didn't speak English, but had such a great connection with that crowd that he was able to get over without having to, you know, say a single word of English. And I see a lot of that, you know, the same thing in Nakamura. So, like you said, he's, you know, I think he's going to do great things in NXT, but like you said, he needs to get on that main roster soon.
Yep. I mean, they literally shouldn't. Not that I'm not saying NXT is a waste, because I love NXT, but maximize every second you've got this guy. I mean, every second. He's amazing. Like, I feel like you could throw him on the main roster now, and he would be believable against anybody you put him in the ring with. He and Brock Lesnar would be a strong style wet dream, is what that would
be. Oh my God, that would be incredible. That would be a hell of a match.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And the other one superstar that we have to talk about out of that show is Asuka. She's so hot.
She's basically the female Nakamura.
She really is. And she knows how to, like, maneuver her way in the ring. And
that match, I love the story they told in that match.
Yeah, they were fantastic. Bayley was amazing.
It was a way to get the title off Bayley without hurting her in the least, because she comes out of it looking like the most sympathetic babyface, you know, for the whole refusing to quit thing. I loved the finish to that match so much, especially when I went back and watched it again after getting home. It was fantastic.
Yeah, no, it definitely was.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was definitely a, you know, because I remember, you know, because that was their whole thing going in there, is that Bayley, you know, doesn't quit. So, you know, and that was like the perfect way to have her lose the belt and keep her strong, the fact that, you know, and also it stakes her claim for, you know, the rematch. You know, she's like, hey, you may have beat me, but just remember, you made everyone tap out to that, you know, Asuka lock, but you didn't make me tap out.
Yep. Yep. And I think all three champions right now in NXT right now are still Boss. By the way, obviously the one guy who retained his title at TakeOver was Finn Balor. He beat Joe. I think we all knew he was going to beat Joe.
And that surprised me, honestly.
The only reason I didn't think they were going to change all three belts, and I don't know if Joe was ever there to actually win the belt. Now, he might. In fact, that's my next question. Steve, I'll ask you first. How much longer does he hold it, and who beats him?
Well, I honestly was like, Nick, I actually kind of thought maybe Joe was going to win that TakeOver, because, you know, the whole rumor going in was that Balor was then going to make his debut on the main roster, and I'm sure we'll get to them eventually when Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows debuted, that he was going to be somehow a part of that. So when he retained...
We get the Bullet Club.
So when he retained, I was very... I was a bit surprised. I mean, the match itself was... You know, aside from them having to stop it like every 5 minutes for, you know, Joe's cut. And Nick, I know you can attest to this. I'm sure that had to be very frustrating watching live.
It was frustrating until it was hilarious, because as I'm watching, I think the second or third stoppage, when the fuck PG chant starts, Stephanie McMahon is sitting second row. And I'm watching her. And as the chant starts, she buries her head between her legs and puts her hands over her ears, because she must have been, like, ridiculously embarrassed by what was happening, because all of her children and I think three of Shane's children were sitting ringside with her when that chant broke out. So, very, what I'm assuming was awkward situation for the McMahon family at that moment.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. But to answer you back to your question, Scott, about who, how much longer does he hold it? The next TakeOver, that's in June, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sure maybe, you know, people may look to that as when he finally loses it, because then maybe they'll see him Balor get called to the main roster in time for SummerSlam and have him, you know, debut there. As for who I think will beat him, I mean, I kind of feel like they're not quite done with the Joe feud, because I think Joe, you know, wants another match. But I'm almost kind of leaning maybe towards, even though we were just talking about how they need to get him on the main roster as soon as possible, I'm almost kind of wanting to see him and Nakamura go at it. I think Nakamura will make a really good NXT champion, if only, you know, for the short term. But I think he could be a great opponent for Finn. I mean, they could have a tremendous match. And I think Nakamura would be a great, you know, NXT champion, if only for the short term.
Right, right. Well, guys, it has been a fantastic show on your debut performances. But as I told you at the beginning of the program, our new my new little game, or I guess torture for some people. Before you go, you get the uninterrupted 2-minute sprint. I hit the clock, and you each get 2 minutes of uninterrupted time to talk about whatever the hell you want. I mean, hopefully I would think you would talk about wrestling, but you don't have to. You can talk about anything you want. Mr. Riddle, since I've known you the longest of the two, you will get to go first. I threw you off because I said Nick was going to go first.
You did.
I pulled a Shane McMahon. No. Actually, no, Nick. You can go first. Because I did promise you'd go first. Maybe you could talk simultaneously. No. All right. So, Nick, your 2 minutes starts now.
All right. I wasn't really sure what I was going to talk about until the Olive Garden comment. So let me talk about why Backlash 2002 is the greatest thing to happen in the history of wrestling. Because you have the smug guy who considers himself a great backstage politician in Triple H, who has just returned from injury and gotten his what he thought was going to be his monster babyface moment at WrestleMania as guys were walking out because they'd already seen the real main event, by the way. And in the course of 4 weeks, the old man Hulk Hogan comes back, is able to totally usurp all the babyface love from Triple H, have the crowd eating out of the palm of his hand, give you the great moment when he comes out on SmackDown to Voodoo Child in the red and yellow. We go into Kansas City, Missouri. We have a phenomenal match, and we get the right decision, what should have happened. Absolutely. Actually, it should have happened cleanly with no interference, but that's another topic for another day. With Hogan dropping the leg, getting the pinfall, and becoming the undisputed champion. The only way it could have been better was if he would have beaten him the next month and gone on to have a 7-year title reign. That would have been my preferred method. So, and I'm going to give up the rest of my time with that.
Never tell you that Greg Phillips carries your sorry ass. All right. Oh,
people have been telling me that for years. Fired. So that's not an insult.
All right, Mr. Riddle, wrap us up, my friend. Your 2 minutes begin now.
Okay, well, as most of you guys know, like I am a longtime wrestling fan. I've been a longtime fan for, God, it'd be 23 years now. God, I feel so old. and I like to consider myself a, you know, somewhat of a hardcore fan. You know, I, you know, go online and read, you know, stuff that I hear about, you know, read all the rumors and all the stuff that's going around. But one thing that's really nagged me these last – pretty much for a long time, it's just I am really, really sick of the IWC, the old Internet Wrestling Community. Not everybody, because I know there are some people that, you know, are, you know, not all their, you know, the high and mighty people that know everything, think they know everything that they're saying, but just that one collection of people where it's just like, no matter what anything, any organization does, I'm talking WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, New Japan, Lucha, everything, nothing satisfies them. They always have something to complain about. And it's like, if you're that upset about it and don't like anything, you know what? You have an easy out. Stop watching. So to all the people that want to say that, oh, you know, WrestleMania 32 was the worst show ever, you know, because of its length and the decisions and there, you know what? Stop watching. If you don't like it that much, there's plenty of other stuff for you to watch. So if there's anything I wish I could just say to somebody, you know, that wants to constantly complain about it, just stop watching and go watch something else. It's that simple.
For the first time in the history of the main event, both guys left time on the table. I'm very impressed. Nick, you left more on the table. That's because Greg Phillips carries your ass. But
you mean the way Hulk Hogan carried Triple H to a good match?
No one carries Triple H to anything.
Backlash 2002.
Wow.
Wow, there's
a shot. Were you just as hammered for that show too as you were for WrestleMania? I'm surprised you even remember the match.
I was 14, so of course I was just as hammered.
Oh, that's good. Ooh, major shots fired.
There's one reason why it's called. That's one reason why it was called the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Oh.
Which, by the way, it should still be. Political correctness sucks.
I can give you the story on that anytime you want.
Ugh, it sucks. Is Jacksonville a dump?
Jacksonville's a dump, but that game is legitimately one of my favorite.
Oh, it's awesome! I love the Georgia Florida game. Always did. Always did. From an objective person who doesn't have a dog in the fight. Aha, a dog in the fight. I love watching that game. I love.
First year I went to that game, I was a sophomore in college. First time I'd ever been because my dad refused to take me for good reason. Now that I look back on it, there was a 65-year-old lady walking through the parking lot we were parked in with a tray of Jell-O shots hanging around her neck, just
65?
Giving them out for free. Yes,
around her neck.
That's an honest to God, like one of those server's trays that you see people like with the like at the casino when they're walking around with the tray. You know what I mean?
Oh my God!
And she was just giving them out for free. That's a true story.
That is hilarious.
It was nuts. That is the wildest tailgate environment I'm in every year I go, and I've been going every year for almost. Let's see, first game was 07, so I've been going every year for 9 years now.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's nuts.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Guys, it has been a pleasure. Thank you, Steve Riddle. It's glad to finally have you on a podcast, and you'll definitely be in rotation and be on more on a myriad of all of our other shows. Check Steve Riddle out. You can start writing some stuff on the site now, my friend.
Yes, I've revived the old Vintage Raw previewing that Chad Campbell used to do.
Yes.
Yeah, so I did Rumble. I did Edge John Cena from Rumble 06, and now I'm starting to I'm still debating what I want to review from the way out, so kind of thinking on that one, and okay. Hopefully I have another kind of weekly article that I have that because I work in a movie theater and have for most of my life, you know, I want to do something where I keep track, where I look back at the box office figures from some of the past few years, see how
that's kind of cool
how that has evolved over the years, because working in the movie theater, I've seen a lot come and go. So
that is true. That is true. That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely look forward to that on the site. Steve, thank you. Nick Duke, it's good to have you on here. You will definitely be back on, of course, as well. I got to get your boy Greg Phillips back on, too. Check it out, guy. The Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. And then you are definitely going to be on. We will definitely have you on Sports Evolution in the summertime when we get ready for the upcoming college football season, because both our teams, the Irish and the Bulldogs, are both going to be very good next year.
Your team will be good. My team, we'll see about that.
Well, it might be a little thin in talent at the moment.
Eight and four or nine and three would be a successful season. Questions at quarterback, questions along the defensive line. You got to give Kirby a little time to recruit a little bit better, and then we'll see from there. But you know, and the schedule is tough this year. It's the toughest schedule Georgia's had since, let's say 2010 when they opened at Oklahoma State.
Yes, I remember that. Do you miss Mark Richt?
2009, excuse me. Do I miss Mark Richt? Do I miss Mark Richt, the football coach, or do I miss Mark Richt, the ambassador for the university? Those are two separate questions. Because Mark Richt, the guy, you could not ask for a better representative for your football program, for your university, for your state, for your fan base. Can't say enough good things about the guy. But as a football coach, I mean, I'm sorry. I know everybody points to the 10 wins. And yes, he won an average of, I think the number's 9.4 wins per year during his time at Georgia. But when you have the talent level that you have at Georgia and that recruiting base in that state, there is no excuse to show up one or two times every year and not just get beaten, but not be competitive.
Right.
And that was him. Every year there was a blowout. And that's fine when you're playing the Alabamas of the world, who you only play once every 7 years now. But there's no excuse to get blown out by Florida. There's no excuse to get blown out by Tennessee.
Right.
You can't do that. And when, at a certain point, when it had been literally 5 or 6 years of getting blown out by somebody,
right?
You know, it's there's one common denominator there, and that was him.
It's unfortunate, but
it is. I mean, it sucks. But I honestly think it's. I think that has re-energized him. I think it's re-energized Georgia's program. I think it's going to be the rare decision that turns out best for everybody, because I think he'll actually go to Miami and be somewhat successful
there. I think they got a lot of work to do down there too, but I think he'll do well there. But I think Kirby will do pretty good in Athens too. So
give him, you know, this year and maybe next year, and I think they'll be contending for the conference and maybe something larger by 2018.
We'll have to look forward to that, and of course we'll definitely have you on in the summertime over on Evolution and back here on Main Event. For Nick Duke, for Steve Riddle, I'm Scott Criscoli. You've been in the Main Event. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Our next episode will be post-payback, so we'll recap the show and then begin the drive to Extreme Rules, which is right down the pike at The Rock in Newark. Have a great 2 weeks, and enjoy payback. Stops. See, first of all, I'm stepping out on my own. About time I elevated to claim my own throne. Success in my blood, call it homegrown. Puerto Rican testosterone. Power and money got me crazy cocky. No longer need you, poppy. I know you're mad because you can't stop me. And if you wonder how this player done scooped your honey, I think she smell my cologne. It's called brand new money. Making major moves, man, ain't a damn thing funny. Pimpin' hood rats to Playboy bunnies. They see the... They see it, they see it. Say what? Money. I'm global, dollar, and roll with Val 50. Like to go out smelling fresh and looking spiffy. Don't like clean money, I want my wrist to be filthy. Pops with that retirement fund, I can't touch till I'm 60. So what am I supposed to do? Rolling through. Steady patting them pockets till I'm stacking hole in two. Ching, ching, bling, bling, catching cash and lump. It's a Coro, get a jacket, I'm selling them out my trunk. Whenever, whatever, it takes a shake down a dollar. Muscle in that direction, wait a minute, holla, holla. All wants to know where they go, where they winning. A mink and Marshall Monday, smelling just like a mint. They got the rocks first. Bank vaults I'm locking. Ching ching, we're mocking. I'm rocking. My family Christmas stockings are shocking. Fine women, any weather. Naughty denim and leather. Call it chicken, whatever. Sunday get better. I want smart cookie. The vet that smacks rookies. My stock's on top. Your checks bounce while mine's boogie. Wrist, I must rock it. Chicks, stop it. I knock it. Cash looks like I got a gang of fists in my pockets. Fist in my pockets. Fist in my pockets. Here comes the money.